Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
Cool. So back, season four, it's been, I think, 2 years. 2023, I think, was the last time we were here with season three. In case you missed some off-season stuff, of course, we did. We had a small issue with the site at a point, and the season one and two podcasts were fine, but I did put out what I called the refreshed season three podcast. So it was just week after week, putting, obviously, episodes 1 to 13. For season three out. That got some very good support, some very good numbers, so thank you to everybody who supported that and made it more worth it with all of that as well. We're back 2 years roughly later. Obviously there's things we've covered and whatnot in the meantime, but we found some space and time to do Breaking Bad season four. I've only got two seasons left, but yeah, season four, episode one, Box Cutter. I recognize that title. David, what did you think of, first of all, coming back to Breaking Bad, and then this episode itself?
Well, I'm slightly confused by the opening episode, because it opens with a flashback, and I was like, wait, what? I was trying to remember exactly what happened at the end of the last episode. Didn't they kill? So, that was very confusing to start off. So I went and checked, and then I was like, oh, it's a flashback. Okay, right. Yes, I remember where we were now. Because they were sort of setting up the lab in the flashback. It was like, I can't remember. So, yes, that was slightly confusing. But, yeah, coming back to it, I mean, it's a great show. And it's nice sort of just settling back into it. It has been a very long time since I watched the fourth season, you know, the first time around. So, yeah, it's good to see them all back again. It's a fairly slow kind of opening episode, I think. There's some interesting things that happen, but it's not got a huge amount packed into this, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, still good. There's some good stuff going on, and yes, the box cutter in question comes into play. So yeah, very good.
Nice. Yeah, pretty much agree. I liked it slightly more, I suppose, than that, but It's interesting because I was doing a Diabolical 7 podcast for the Gen V yesterday, and one of the things I talked about is when you come back to a show and the sort of like settling back in thing, which I think every show kind of has that, right? The sort of, okay, you've been away for 2 years and that kind of thing, which obviously Gen V has that situation as well. Not that we deliberately had that situation, but it's also been 2 years for us with this. So that kind of settling back in and sort of, how, I guess, the idea of how quickly can you, not that your audience has forgot, but how quickly can you sort of remind them what happened and then settle back in and then kick the momentum on from that? And I think the episode does do a good job of that, but it's interesting because sometimes it's a case of, okay, are you going to open your episode with something really big or close it with something really big? And this does almost, it does do a slow burn kind of, here's kind of what everyone's up to sort of thing, which I don't mind. I agree it's not the most entertaining thing, but it's important to kind of do that. Like, you go back to Hank and where he's at, obviously with the 1 minute thing that in the car park and that, and the minerals and things, seeing what Skylar's up to and how she's handling relationship with Walt, and obviously Walt Jr., or Flynn, whatever his name was at this point, and seeing how all that's kind of going. And then also it does a lot of good assessing in the way of, okay, what's happening between these two and then these two, and then it's sort of, you know, the Gale shenanigans and all that, how's that fallout gonna work out? And then I guess the main sort of question for the episode, or for the current point in the show, is like, okay, where are specifically Walt and Gus at with each other? Like, is that all good? And, you know, there's the whole schedule thing and just everything surrounding that. So because I kind of misremembered this a little bit, because I saw the title Box Cut and I immediately remembered what that was about. Not all the other details about the episode, just that particular scene. I thought I remembered that happening nearer to the start of the episode, but I think it's actually better that it ends with that, because it's very much a sort of, you spent the episode settling back in and, you know, seeing where everybody's at and all that, which I just talked about, and then like, okay, here's this really big set piece, and then it's like, you know, a bit from Gus, oh, you have to get back to work. That just like, you know, carry on kind of thing, and then the important conversation at the end. It's a great way to sort of, yeah, settle back in, do that big set piece, and then leave you with the question of like, okay, what do Walt and Jesse do next? So I think it does do a very good job of that. I don't know why I remember that happening near the start. I guess it's just one of the points in the episode that really does stand out. So I liked it a fair bit as well. It's good to be back in this world with the show. And again, you know, brilliant writing and acting. And this is another one. I've spoken about this with a number of shows recently, that while you do have a couple of people in scenes that stand out, it's still, the show's so full of talent that if I was to go, right, that person was really good, oh, but that person was really good as well, and then I ended up just going through the whole cast, pretty much. But there's some very particularly interesting, like, acting near the end of the episode from, like, what each character is specifically doing. Obviously, we'll break that down when we get to it as well. So, yeah, I enjoy being back in the world on that. And I was going to say, we see where it goes. I don't remember every detail, which is nice. But be interesting to see this journey continue in the next episode. But we're not done with this episode yet. We've still got it to break down. That's it for the pre-talk stuff and all that. Let's get into some housekeeping, let you know what's been going on recently with Entertainment Talk, and then we'll get into the episode itself, season 4, episode 1, Box Cutter. We'll see you in a second. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there. If you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talk's podcast and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcast that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps, and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, speaking of Gen V Season 2, just remembered, like, you know, yesterday that the show comes back next week. It's on the 17th of September, comes up with 3 episodes. I've already explained the schedule and whatnot over on that podcast. But yeah, Diabolical 7 podcast back for Gen V Season 2 preview podcast. Of course, with the passing away of a particular actor, so I talked about that, and they're not recasting him, and all those sorts of things. But I'm cautiously optimistic in a certain way, because, you know, the sophomore slump sort of possibility, but I really enjoyed season 1, so I'm looking forward to getting back into that. So that'll be kicking off next week. Over on Political Talk, there's always interesting weird things to talk about over there. This is called The Curious Case of Lucy Connolly. Of course, she was the person who made, let's call it, the infamous tweet about burning hotels, or encouraging other people to burn hotels. There was a reform conference thing, if we want to call it that, over the weekend. Didn't break down the whole thing there, but just focused on the Lucy Connolly case and just talked about all that madness over there. So focused on that one for that, so that was good. Over on Much Nicer Things, I went and saw Weapons this week, I think it was, which is a brand new horror film. Absolutely loved it. Really, really great kind of work over there. Gave that a strong must-see rating and review. So that was for Weapons. That's the, for those of you who don't know, that's the one with the kids. They do the Naruto run, and they run away in the middle of the night, and you try to figure out why. So That was that film, so that was really good. Over on Gaming Talk, we didn't do one this week, but over on last week, we talked about the Call of Duty movie being in development from Paramount and Activision, so obviously I had a few things to say about that. We had a long presentation for 007 First Light, which is the next James Bond game, come out next year. It was a big state of play for that, and I had a lot of things to say about that. And Ubisoft also acknowledged that Rayman still exists, which was nice of them, I suppose. So we talked about that with... because Rayman just had his 30th anniversary of existing, I suppose. So we'll see what exactly Ubisoft does do about that, but it was nice for them to acknowledge he exists. I suppose says that. Over on the United Cast, of course, I did our summer transfer talk wrap up. The transfer window is closed, so talked about that and talked specifically about Bruno Fernandes and everything else over there. Over on Video Game Reviews, I did a strong must play review for Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Very highly recommend that game. Absolutely loved it. Just brilliant in lots and lots of different ways. So talked all about that. Over on the United Cast recently, we did indeed do the unthinkable, which was lose to Grimsby in the second round of the Carabao Cup. We took it to 12-11 on penalties. The penalty shootout was about 20 minutes. I never thought it was going to end. But yeah, they stormed the pitch after because they were very happy. So fair enough to them. And we're out of the Carabao Cup. So yeah. Anyway, the United Cast returns this weekend. We face Man City away at the Etihad, so we'll see how that goes, because there's been an international break and all that, so that's all that. And that's pretty much everything we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into the episode. Speaking of the flashback that you mentioned, in a flashback, Gale excitedly sets up equipment in an underground meth super lab, of course the one that we know, for Gus Fring. Gale asks Gus about the blue meth being produced by chemist Walter White. Gus explains he has reservations about hiring Walt. This is when they were a bit more, I suppose, on the rocks. But Gale insists Gus hire him because of his superior product. And then they continue just like unpacking very big boxes, very, very big boxes for all the equipment. Of course, always just wonderful to see John Carlos Esposito in pretty much anything. I think it might be scientifically impossible for him to give a bad performance, even if you gave him like a really horrible script. I'm sure he'd still make a meal out of it, but great to see that. And something I do like about particularly this episode, when it's like more than two people in a scene, because there's a lot of paired scenes in this episode, is just how, and this is kind of part of the show's male ego perspective, because there's obviously a lot of those flying around, is like Victor being kind of silent and, you know, getting on with it, Gus still being his silent self, but you know, you can see that the cogs are always ticking in the brain, and then Gale just being like really excited about things, and then them just getting into this conversation. So to see, I know Victor doesn't really, I don't think he says anything in the scene, but to see those two things kind of clash a little bit, and then Gale be concerned slash also interested in Walter White and the crystal and the whole 3% thing and all that sort of thing, was just was interesting to kind of see. So yeah, it's a great kind of start to the episode. What do you think?
Yeah, it's lovely to see. I mean, it's always great to see Giancarlo doing anything. I mean, he's fabulous in this and the next scene as well. But it's also great to see David Constable back as well as Gus, Gale, because he does pop up a couple of more times, I think, this season as well. Even in other flashback stuff, obviously, at this point. But, I mean, Gale's a great character. And David looks so young in this, for those of the view that are fans of Billions, where he plays Wags, and he's a lot older in at that point, obviously. So yeah, he sort of it's just nice to see sort of Gale back and kind of nerding out over the meth and the quality of it and that sort of stuff. It's really kind of fun to see that dynamic. Yes, I can't remember. I know he pops up again. I can't remember exactly what the context is for those two flashbacks, but yes.
Yeah. But great start to the episode. In the present, following Walt's order, Jesse Pinkman has indeed killed Gale. There's like an interesting, I know we talked about it at the end of last season, but the cliffhanger for that as to whether he, it showed him shooting the gun, but He didn't know if he actually hit Gale or whatever had happened. But yeah, Jesse Pinkman has killed Gale to foil Gus's plot to kill them. Gus's henchman Victor arrives at Gale's apartment and finds him dead, of course, surrounded by neighbours who have called the police. I don't know if we should stop there or not, but yeah, he goes there and he finds him and of course has a bit of a freak out. So, and then I don't think there's much to talk about here, but pretty much just go straight outside. Victor finds Jesse sitting in a car. It's pretty much from like here until the post cleanup scene that Jesse's very, he doesn't say much for like the whole rest of the episode, does he? Pretty much just
no.
You see him here and then he just like sits in that chair for a long time. Anyway, Victor finds Jesse sitting in a car and forces him to return to the lab. Points a gun at him, obviously, where Mike is also holding Walt. Mike is concerned that Victor was seen at Gale's apartment and calls to inform Gus. Victor realizes his own position is precarious and reveals he observed Walt and Jesse's work by starting to cook meth himself, hoping to prove his value to Gus. I can't remember if that happens in this particular bit, but it was interesting when, what was it, Walt, because he's not really Heisenberg in this whole episode, because we are still very much at the point where it's like, he's Walt in certain scenes, Heisenberg in certain scenes. I don't think he's like, I wouldn't say he's Broken Bad yet, so.
No.
Yeah, but him kind of, because yeah, there was a bit where it was like, hey, you know, Gus is, you know, timey-wimey concerned, or, you know, time-sensitive concerned, we have 10 minutes or whatever, we have to start, and then Victor just kind of takes that into his own hands. But yeah, this was a great way to kind of set the stage for not just the next couple of scenes, but obviously the last one for the episode. But yeah, this is when you start to get to where it's like Walter's there, Jesse gets taken in, Victor's there, Mike is there, they're just like nervously waiting for Gus, and then we'll see how that continues at a certain point. I noticed they say here about Victor trying to prove himself to Gus. I mean, all four of these people will be doing that, even Mike, who's obviously been around for a while and, you know, knows the game. But I thought it was also a way of not just him doing that, because again, you always want to try and prove yourself to Gus, but of trying to show off to Walt in a certain way. Again, we got to remember the whole male ego kind of part. There was maybe a little bit of that, because he kind of gives him this look of, oh, you're the smart one that's going to make Gus happy maybe, but I'm going to crack on with this and like show what I can do. So I don't know, we'll get back to that in a bit. What do you think of all these parts of scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is the fact that, you know, Victor has this conversation with Mike of like, you know, did you manage to sweep the scene? And he's like, no, there were people around. So there is a danger that there was stuff there that may point to Gus. So he couldn't do that. I mean, clearly there was no way he could do that. It's not really his fault, but he also understands, having had that conversation with Mike, that there is going to then be a conversation with Gus over that, and Gus is going to be disappointed, because, you know, if something in that points back to him, Victor, not really very fairly, but Victor is probably going to get the blame for it. So he needs to do something to prove that he is worth keeping around. So, and also, you know, I think you're right, there is a certain amount of, we don't need you, to Walt, and proving that he knows what he's doing, and, you know, starting the cook, because there is a time scale and he wants to prove that he can continue it. So there are a couple of different things, but I think Victor partly is like, you know, fighting for his life a little bit, and he realizes that this could be a real problem. So I think there is a mixture of things going on there. Mm-hmm. And of course, it doesn't go very well for Victor. Later on into this episode.
Yeah. I just scrolled ahead a little bit in the notes, and it wasn't in one of the next ones. I just liked, again, Jesse's sitting there just kind of, you know, dejected, and Mike sort of just doing his Mike thing. It's when, for me, it's when Victor, like, realizes the 10-minute thing, takes it upon himself, and starts grabbing whatever it is he's grabbing. and Walt does this. I love Walt's like defense throughout this whole episode. Obviously, there's the rambly monologue bit we'll get to in a minute when Gus is there. But the way he sort of whispers next to Jesse, which I think Victor heard that, by the way, and because I couldn't remember that specific scene, but I don't know if it was Victor was standing there just to see what Walt was saying, or to maybe it was to do both. But because again, Walt's got a very particular routine in that, when it was sort of, because Walt's trying to comfort himself and comfort Jesse and say like, hey, he's not going to do this, and you know, that's very much like Heisenberg doesn't do that either, so that's very much like a Walter White thing. But when it was the bit I really liked was what was it when he said I bet he forgets the whatever it was, and then he walks around the table and he picked something up, and I'm going to guess that was the thing, and Walt sort of like, oh, he's done it. I really like that bit. Because I don't think it didn't look to me like Victor exactly knew what to do next. Then he heard that bit and then he moved. So that's the way I kind of took it. Anyway, yeah. So that was great. Just the sort of like, oh, he did it. Damn it.
Good.
So anyway, moving away from the lab, Skylar White observes Walt's car in her driveway and moves it a few blocks away so Walt Jr. will not see it. She calls Saul Goodman, I remember him, good old Bob Odenkirk, to ask where Walt is. But Saul is paranoid, understandably, because of Walt's falling out with Gus, and is busy checking his office for listening devices. I do love the kind of, it's a good reminder of like the range of characters that we have in Breaking Bad as well. And while Saul is, of course, you know, when you go for Better Call Saul, it's Jimmy Gene Saul and that whole interesting story. Because he is kind of, while Walt can be funny, Jess can be funny at points, other characters can somewhat be funny at different points, it's this like, and it's not always lighthearted with Saul, there are, you know, drama scenes and things like that, but it's this, and it's not as if this scene is particularly funny either, it's just he's that like great part, he's that great particular part of the show. But yeah, him kind of lifting up the bits and pieces in his office, and he's got that machine and everything. I thought that was great. Of course, we've got Huell back as well in his famous chair, and then is it Francesca or something? His assistant, Francine, Francesca, something like that. Yeah, I think. She's back there and just flicking through magazines, doing not much of anything. So I thought that was quite good. But yeah, great to see Saul Goodman back as well. But one of the interesting kind of, I couldn't quite remember this bit part. So Skylar moving this car, she gets in it, and I couldn't remember exactly why she's taking it away or like where she took it to. So that was interesting to kind of rediscover. I thought that until I realized what she was actually doing slightly later, I was like, oh, she's moving it near Hank's house possibly, but that wasn't what she was doing. So because I'm not sure. I'm going to guess Walt Jr. is at school in this scene, and then she just wants to take the car away to avoid that, because that whole thing is on the rocks. So, anyway, what do you think of these two scenes?
I really like that sort of scene. You've got Marie showing up at the door, which is when she sort of realizes that Walt's car is in the driveway. I think Walt Jr. is actually in his room, and because she mentions, I think later on, about he was going to wake up, I think, and see the car. I don't think he was out. I think he was. I can't remember. I may be misremembering that, but yes. So yeah, she sees the car and kind of moves it, and then I mean, Salt. It's always good to see Bob Odenkirk as Salt, because I mean, he's just great in this, and yeah, the sort of furiously scrabbling around to try and,
which I completely locate. Understand, to be fair.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've got this huge drug dealer that's had a massive falling out with his chemist, and the chemist is apparently missing, and you're sort of lying, going, oh no, he's fine, I'm sure he'll turn up, you know, that sort of thing to his wife. And yeah, I mean, it's, I entirely understand why he's completely paranoid. I mean, being completely paranoid is what's kept Saul safe to this point. So, you know, makes perfect sense. So, yeah, they're a great set of scenes, this.
Yeah, Definitely. We continue with Skylar. She breaks into Walt's, well, breaks in quotes, into Walt's place with the aid of a locksmith, but finds nothing of interest. And then we get to Marie in a second. Yeah, this whole, like, just sob story thing is, yeah, was an interesting... I remember, like, half of this, but I couldn't remember the conclusion, because I kind of, for some strange reason, I remembered this guy slightly turning up, and I remembered sort of what the front door of this place looked. So I remember that he does actually move somewhere else, you know, later in the series, which is now. So I kind of remembered those bits, but yeah, because I've you know, never had to do a like locksmith thing like that before, and sort of because he was saying, you know, you haven't shown me proof of ID, but then she's saying about the car and everything else and making different excuses. I don't know how those things work legally or whatever, but she manages to, I guess, convince him and sort of get past that, which I bought the scene, thought it worked, because she does do like a very convincing job in that, and just almost, I don't know if it's completely the convincing part, it's almost just he maybe wants to get away from her, because like yeah, just because of like what she's being like, and he just, yeah, solves it that way, I suppose. What do you think of the whole locksmith situation?
I don't think I've ever had to actually do that in real life, thankfully. You know, get a door locksmith to come out to change door locks, but I mean, it makes perfect sense that he, you know, because otherwise if you were burgling somebody, then you could make up any story, and if the locksmith just comes out and he's like, oh sure, and just opens the door, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
have a big problem in society.
Yeah, so I mean, it does make perfect sense that he's going to be a little bit suspicious, but then, you know, it's this emotional, slightly crazy lady that's, you know, bouncing a baby around and is clearly in some sort of state. You can sort of see why he might relent and agree to do it. So yeah, I mean, I think you're partly right. He's like, it's not like she's likely to be trying to break in to steal stuff, so I think he probably just rolls the dice and goes, I just need to get out of here and
let her in. Situation, so I'm gonna let this one slide. Yeah, I think it was more to do with that. Marie, going back to her, struggles to maintain her composure while caring for Hank, who is still bedridden. So this is after, for those of you who might not remember, this is after the fight with the twins, the infamous twins in the car park, where he had he'd been told he had 1 minute. That was the name of the episode. I think it was episode 9. I only remember that because I was, you know, redoing the episodes and stuff and came across it. So, and he's still injured from that, which makes sense. Still bedridden after the attempt on his life. He's just very understandably miserably, but still miserably just bidding on, sitting there and just bidding on minerals. It's kind of interesting at different points this relationship, because Marie almost called her Betsy, but Betsy Brand is the person who plays her. Just like, she's trying to do this gentle, I'm gonna take care of this grumpy guy, you know, because I'm married to him and I love him and all this sort of thing. And while Hank is, you know, obviously grateful in a certain degree, you can very much see this kind of, I just want to sort of sit here in peace and just bid on these things. But then, of course, the toilet thing comes up and she has to help with that, and he's, you know, not happy about that. So it's not a very, you know, comfortable scene to watch. It's not, you can almost like imagine yourself in the corner sort of awkwardly being there or something. But yeah, it is what it is. She's trying to help him and he's grumpy for very obvious reasons, but there's not a ton that either of them can really do about that. So yeah, but it was still very well done. It was just kind of, okay, this was another establishing scene of, hey, remember, Hank is injured, we're going to show you him here and show you even though he's not doing a lot, show you what he's doing and the sort of state of mind that he's in, and that Marie's just trying to be calm and just try to help him through it. So what do you think of the scene?
Yeah, I mean, we get Grumpy Hank, I seem to remember, for a few episodes before he eventually sort of snaps out of it when he starts getting better.
Yeah.
But it's just the way that Marie's trying to be, you know, upbeat and you know, he's like, hey, you broke new ground today. And he's like, if you count walking, you know, 16 feet instead of 15 and a half, you know. I entirely understand where he's coming from, and he's miserable. He wants to be left alone. He's quite happily bidding on his rocks, and you know, and she's trying to be positive and going, "Oh, it's a pretty one." And she's like, you know, he's like, "That's not the point." You know, just doesn't want to engage with that. And I mean, he's just miserable and grumpy and kind of acting like a child, you know, and not being in any way positive about his recovery. So yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, that, because I think Marie is trying her hardest, but I mean, you know, Hank is Hank, and wonderfully played by Dean Norris, although I do rather like the sort of rather more upbeat Hank when he comes back. But yeah, it's grumpy Hank for a few episodes yet, I seem to remember.
Yeah, there's also a little kind of detail I picked up on the scene with, and this is a very minor thing, but you know how we sort of, okay, bid and then wait, and he's kind of, I know he's inactive because he's sitting in the bed, but like, he's not doing a lot on the laptop. I wonder if, like, let's say he was doing something where he was typing and clicking a lot and doing things like that, if, and I get to the point of the scene is he's kind of just sitting there, and he's, because he's waiting for the next bid to come in, because he doesn't need to bid if he's the highest one. And he's kind of sitting there waiting while Marie's trying to engage with him. So it makes it kind of quieter in that way, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting little kind of detail. Where are we now? I think this might be... Yes, this is the scene, I think. Gus arrives at the lab but says nothing until he pretty much leaves. Walt launches into a rambling monologue. It's a good description for that. Hoping to convince Gus he needs Walt and Jesse alive, Gus maintains his silence while changing into hazmat gear and picking up the box cutter Gale used during the lab setup. I love, by the way, the different shots that we get of this in the episode. Like the camera sort of pans over to it and focuses on it before this happens. During the lab setup, he startles everyone by slicing Victor's throat, then coldly eyes Walt and Jesse to ensure his message was received. He quietly returns to his, it says, his street clothes, then walks out, pausing only to say, "Get back to work," and then just leaves them to it. I think this scene is pretty much perfect from top to bottom. It was just, again, you've got these four people, and they're all kind of doing different things. You've got Jesse, who's sitting there just being like, "We're about to die," kind of mood. And then Walt just will not stop talking, which I love. One thing I was trying to pick up on as well, because we haven't seen this for 2 years, is like, okay, how far, because we called this Becoming Heisenberg as well for a reason, how far towards his Heisenberg persona had he got? And while I was watching him do this, I was like, okay, he's Walter White in this scene. There might be some, it's like a exaggerated version of that, but he's not Heisenberg here. But again, it's kind of, you got Gus just cool, calm and collected, very, very meticulous. I've always loved the meticulous sort of nature of Gus in these scenes, the sort of the placing of things, and then like carefully putting something on a coat hanger, taking it off, and then like uncreasing it and placing his shoes on the floor, and then just all those bits and pieces. And then if something like when he's washing different things, and then shaking his hat, shaking that off, and then like placing his glasses back on, it's really, really well done by Giancarlo Esposito. But you've got Victor, who sort of, because the way I look at these four is, okay, Jesse's doing his dejected, "We're all about to die, there's nothing we can do." Walt is just saying anything and everything in his mind to convince Gus. Mike, I think, interestingly, again, he's one in this situation that he's been there, done that, and, you know, worn the t-shirt, as they say, with this kind of stuff, with this kind of business, which Gus has as well, but I think Mike's almost got even more kind of experience with it. And even he's got this look of, okay, bro, Gus probably won't kill me here, but I don't know what he's going to do. Like, no one really knows what he's going to do in that room, apart from, you know, he's probably going to do something. But I love the difference in the detail with there with Mike, because it cuts over to their different faces at different points for different reactions. But even Mike has got this kind of, I'm not sure, I know something's about to happen, but I don't know what it is, which I found really interesting. And then just, yeah, Walt just rambling about, like, you cannot get rid of us, you cannot do this, this must happen, and, like, if you kill Jesse here, I'm gone, and, you know, trying to really, really just plead for his life and everything. And Brian delivers that monologue just incredibly well. And then you've got Gus just doing the sort of, nothing's going to happen to me here. He knows that. Because he's the only safe person in the whole room, really. Mm-hmm. Again, Mike's very unlikely to die, but, you know, it's about a 5% chance of him dying here. But it's just, it's the hangers and the coat and the getting changed before and after, and everything's just brilliant here. And I kind of misremembered the actual wound. I thought he cut his neck open more and then let it bleed in a different way. But I noticed what he was trying to do, which is, okay, get the blood to actually, like, spray in a specific way, which I don't think you... I'm not a wound expert, but I don't think you can do that in if the wound is, like, bigger. And then it's just, like, Victor's... He scrambled around for longer than I remember as well. Like, he takes a minute to actually die here. And then he's kind of scrambling with Gus. And then, you know, it's just getting more slippery and everything because of all the blood. Then everyone else is just sort of in shock. And then, yeah, Gus just... Yeah, just walks away, gets on with it, and then just... I do love how he doesn't say anything until it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Back to work, guys. As if nothing happened.
Yeah.
I love it. I've seen this scene. Yeah, it is perfect. What do you think of it?
It's brilliant. I mean, Giancarlo's fantastic. Like I said, the fact that it's silent throughout the entire thing, doesn't say a word until that, well, get back to work at the end, is... just wonderfully, wonderfully done. You have no idea what's going to happen when he does kill Victor. There's a shot that, I mean, even Mike looks a bit shocked.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Over that as well. Walt sort of rambling of like sort of saying, you know, you can't do this. If you kill me, you have nothing. If you kill Jesse, you don't have me. You're too smart for this. That sort of thing. And
stuff. Yeah.
And ultimately, I think Gus knows he's right as well at that. You know, at this point, I don't have Gail. Victor isn't up to the job. Plus, I'm pissed at Victor for the fact that, you know, Gail got killed in the first place. So even though it's not really Victor's fault, you know, he couldn't go in and do anything about it. But, you know, so you're in this situation where you know something's going to happen, but he knows Walt's right. He can't actually kill them. So he's going to kill Victor instead. There is a little, I found some little bits of trivia about the box cutter thing as well. In some of the notes on one of the websites, the box cutter model used in the episode is an RSG 383 quick blade safety grip by Pacific Handy Cutter Inc. apparently, if you wanted to know that. And the reason it's green is because the production designer picked a green one because it's easy to see on the red floor. So it was a fair sort enough, of, yeah. You know, that's choice for picking that out, which I rather like that as a sort of, and well, yeah,
a lot of red there, so.
Yes, it is the same one that, that Gail used at the beginning as well. So yeah. I thought those just random bits of trivia from that, but yeah, I mean, it's just a great scene from start to end, and Giancarlo's fantastic in it and shows what a commanding presence he can be when, you know, just talking. And I mean, I've seen him talk in real life, and Giancarlo himself talking in real life is quite mesmerizing to watch. But yeah, I mean, it's so comes out of Gus. with this, and you know, not saying a word throughout the whole thing, and the power behind it is quite astonishing. So yeah, it's just a great scene.
Yeah, absolutely. I was kind of thinking a little bit about villains and things like that. Whether you specifically label Gus as a villain or not is up to you, because again, the whole morality scale and things like that. But I was thinking of somebody of like the two opposites, to say somebody like the Joker, who is not, while he plans things, he's not, you know, meticulous. He's very kind of just, I'll throw this bomb here, or you know, he can be like, Joker can be a bit, he can be organized to a degree, but not in, like, you won't see the Joker doing the same things that Gus is doing. And I was thinking, okay, would I rather go up against someone like Gus or someone like the Joker? Neither of them would be, you know, great to deal with, but you'd almost want to go up against the Joker, because just from a planning angle of, okay, while Gus might be easier to maybe physically fight, although he can handle himself in that as well, I thought about it in a way of, like, if let's say you had to go, and this is very, you know, hypothetical and whatever, but if you, like, knew you were going to fight one of the two of them and they both were coming up with plans, you know that what the Joker would be setting up would just be potentially much more sloppy and maybe easier to get away from, whereas...
I don't know, yeah.
Whereas with Gus, because you don't really know what Gus is exactly going to do, or, like, if he's going to send somebody else after you or something, yeah, I was just kind of thinking, go on.
I probably would still prefer Gus, just because at least Gus can be reasoned with to a certain point, whereas somebody like the Joker, you just can't. If he's got his mind, if the Joker has his mind set on doing something, he will generally follow it. Yeah, he will follow it through unless it's funny not to. But, you know, I mean, there's, I don't know. That's a sort of tricky one, because I think the thing with the Joker is, yes, it might be more sloppily done, but it's also incredibly unpredictable. Whereas Gus is unpredictable, but you can at least reason with him to a certain extent, which, I mean, of course, is what Walt is trying to do when he's talking. And I mean, going back to what you were saying, the sort of, you know, is he Walter White at this point, or is he Heisenberg? And he's almost Walter White at points in this, pretending to try and be Heisenberg. I think when he's doing these speeches, you know, he's trying to, like, that the whole thing about saying, if you come for us, if you thought you were gonna simply allow you to murder us, you know, we killed Gail, but I'd do it again if you came after either of us, you know, that all that sort of stuff that he was doing is still doesn't feel like Heisenberg. It feels like Walter pretending to be Heisenberg. At this point, so yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that in the way of, I remember some of Heisenberg's speeches and the way he talked, and that's not, while there might be some bits slipping through, which again is kind of the whole thing of him slipping into the persona now and again, that was, you know, still more Walt than Heisenberg. Again, from almost from like a panicked stamp, and I get that it's a panic situation for a reason, but that's the way I kind of thought about that. Just the last bit on the whole Joker Gus thing, I more thought about it in like a chaos sense of way, and a sort of who would have the plan that I'd be more nervous for, I suppose. Again, neither of them would be good to go up against. They'd probably both kill me anyway, but
I mean, I think they're both incredibly dangerous for two different reasons. Gus will have thought out every angle pretty much, and that's dangerous to go up against. But at least you can maybe convince him that there may be a better option. Yeah. Whereas Joker is completely unpredictable. So, That I think would bother me more, because Joker can just shoot you because he feels like it, whereas Gus is not going to do that. You know, if Joker was in that sort of situation, he probably would have, you know, just shot Jesse for the sake of it, you know, regardless of what that what Walt quiet. Says. Because Joker doesn't necessarily do things which are in his best interest as well. He does things because he feels like it. So I think, whereas with this, you know, the reason that they're still alive is because Walter is right. Gus can't kill them because it ruins what he's got going. And I mean, ultimately there would have been a way forward. He couldn't make the same meth, but he could still, you know, go and find another meth, you know, somebody else that can cook meth, maybe not to the level that Walter can, but I mean, he could, he'd still have a business. It just wouldn't be as good. But yeah, I mean, it's unlikely because Gus wants the best product he can, so you know, he keeps them alive.
Yeah. I was just thinking about scripts for a moment and Walt's whole speech. Now, I recently tried something very, 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 very small scale, which was performing lines from The Last of Us, and that was very difficult. Of course, I'm not a professional voice actor or actor or anything, but I'm kind of looking at a scene like that, and you know how some productions do let things slip in that are like not scripted and things like that, like off the cuff kind of moments, and they go, oh, that, you know, felt right or looked good, we'll keep it in. I wonder whether with a speech like that, because that's a lot of words and very quick sort of scattered, panicked way to say that, and while Brian's obviously a phenomenal actor and stuff, I wonder how much you could do of that of... like if it gets bits wrong but it says something similar and you can just kind of go with the flow a little bit. Because when for me when I was doing, you know, like six lines or something, there was still bits that I had to go back over and do. But obviously that was very small scale. But I was thinking about, because obviously he hasn't got the script in front of him. He's got to remember a lot of that or like kind of off the cuff or whatever. So yeah, I was just kind of wondering about script and things like that. So... anyway, perfect scene, really, really great, and just get back to work. I love how that kind of also, because we've got the next bit here, which is Walt and Jesse use hydrofluoric acid to dispose of Victor's body, the gun that killed Gale, and the box cutter. So, you know, they do their cleanup job. I love the little moment as well where they can't quite get Victor's body in there, and Mike Standers watches them for a second. He's like, okay, I don't need to get involved here, but I'm going to observe. And then he just lends that little hand, and the way that Mike kind of walks off from that, I was like, there we go, kind of thing. So I thought that was pretty good. I also like the little, as a person who cleans at a school, I like the little detail of Walt kind of just spraying the side of it and just kind of cleaning it up again, you know, with Gus being very meticulous and everything. This would have to be done, you know, 100% in the way that it needed to. So I thought that was pretty good as well. But I love how within all that, this sort of, obviously it's implied that the get back to work is, even though I just made this mess, you guys are cleaning this up, and then you're gonna get back to it. I thought that was pretty great. What do you think of them cleaning up, I suppose?
Well, yes, there's a funny sort of moment where Mike's sort of going, are you sure this will work, when they dispose of the body? And they're like, yeah, trust us, because they've done it before with hydrofluoric acid. In a previous season, they disposed of...
Season one.
With the body. I thought that was quite a nice little callback. And, you know, that... the leaving them basically to sort of clean everything up and just sort of walking out as well. So
yeah, very kind of like the boss leaning over the railings and just giving his command. Yeah, that was in I don't know why I'm remembering this now, but I think it was in season one, because Jesse got the wrong acid and then it went through the floor. So the earlier, more amateur days of these two. Onto our final scene. During breakfast, Walt insists Gail's death was necessary, but expresses concern that Gus will kill them at his next opportunity. Jesse believes it will be too much for Gus to find another drug manufacturer, though Gus might make them wish they were dead. Police investigate Gail's apartment, but overlook his lab notebook, which I'd totally forgotten about, at least for now. I can't remember if they do or don't actually pick it up, but it is there, but they haven't found it yet, but that's a possibility. Yeah, it's a great little kind of, okay, like I said in the pre-talk, it was sort of, okay, we've settled back in, we're back in with all the characters, we know what they're all, we're reminded of what they're all up to in that. We have this big scene, and then this kind of, okay, how concerned should we be? What should we do next? Would we be next? Would Gus kill us? All those kind of things. I do understand both their points, because with Walt, it was kind of, okay, we could be next, but I think Jesse's arguably more correct in the way of, okay, he needs us, and if he wants somebody who's going to do a good enough job, that gives him a, you know, good reason not to get rid of us. And Jesse is very, don't want to say very cool, calm and collected, but very kind of like, I don't see any other possibility, any other sort of situation. You could also see a little bit of, because obviously you could say Walt's got more, you know, life experience and things like that, and I think there's a bit of kind of, not the wise old man approach, but the sort of he's thinking about it in a maybe more mature way, whereas Jesse's kind of, well, he can't find anybody else, he won't be able to find anybody else, so we're all good, which I don't think is completely true, but I get his point. So yeah, kind of, I enjoyed seeing them both sort of discuss that as well. I thought that was pretty good. Any thoughts on their conversation?
Yeah, I mean, the sort of them eating breakfast pops up a few times as we go through that sort of, you know, they're after a cook kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting back and forth about, you know, are we valuable enough not to be killed? But are we in a situation where that actually could in some ways be worse, because we know he wants to kill us for what we did, but he can't. So is he just going to make our life hell, you know, in the meantime? And yeah, that's an interesting thing to consider moving forward as well. So yeah, it's an interesting discussion that sort of sets a tone, I think.
I suppose it just poses an overall question of who would Gus get rid of, because Mike's probably wondering maybe the same thing, because like we said, even with Mike, there was a sort of, when Gus walks in, he has the I'm not sure what he's gonna do look, but I've been in a similar situation. And then even when he does kill Victor, like you said, there's the sort of, oh, he's gone with, you know, there's actually the shock there, which I don't recall Mike himself being shocked a lot of times through Breaking Bad, or Better Call Saul, because he's in Better Call Saul as well, isn't he? He's not really a character that's, not because he's, you know, emotionless or whatever, but there's just that experience there. So he's not, you know, as surprised by as many actions. Because, yeah, I kind of wonder, while these two are having this discussion, if Mike's kind of wondering, not to the same degree, but, you know, putting a question mark over stuff. Which this whole thing was, you know, what Gus would have wanted, in the way of, you guys slipped up, I'm going to just make this example to, I guess, put you back on track and to get back to work, I suppose. So yeah, that's the, I don't have much to say about Gail's book. Just kind of noted that, that is, I remember there being, if I remember, I won't do, obviously we're not a future spoiler podcast. We won't spoil things from the future, but, I think I remember what's in that book, but I can't remember. I do remember one character that ends up picking it up, but I can't remember where it goes in, like, the immediate next couple of episodes, if it's picked up or who it's picked up by. I can't quite remember.
No, me neither. So, I can't remember at all, so.
Yeah. So we'll see where that goes. I do genuinely like that, although I remember, you know, from episode one to the finale, the things that happened, but not all of the details, so things are still a little bit of a surprise, which is nice. Anyway, that's the end of the episode, the season premiere. We're back in. If you let's get into feedback. If you would like to write in to the show, let us know what you think of the show so far. I hope you're enjoying Breaking Bad, because, you know, it's got a lot of awards and things for reasons. So, but if this is your first time through Breaking Bad, if you have or haven't seen Better Call Saul as well, that's a good show to talk about connected to this. We've covered all that as well, if you want to check that out. If this is your second time through, third time, whatever, or your first time through Breaking Bad, remember, we are... we're not doing future spoiler stuff, so don't worry about that if it's your first time through the show. But let us know where you're at with the show, how many times you've seen it, etc., etc., and, yeah, what your thoughts are and all that. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org. Social media, eTalkieCare Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. We do only have one this week. I should have put out... I kept thinking about it and then not doing it. I should have put out a little two-minute thing saying, hey, we're coming back on such and such date. So, anyway, hopefully this kicks things on and we can... get some more feedback next time. But Lucas writes in and says, brand new to Entertainment Talk after being a recent Geek Town listener. So you've experienced both sides, which is cool. Thank you both for what you do. You're welcome. Just about caught on to you doing Breaking Bad in the next few weeks. I've mentioned it like here and there on different podcasts, like, hey, we might come back soon, but just not at that point when. Caught on to doing it in the next few weeks, so I thought I'd jump on episode one of season four. I'm a new watcher, so no spoilers, please. Again, you have no worries with that kind of stuff. Needless to say, that I was startled by Victor's death. The acting in the show is excellent. Do you know how many Emmys, etc., it got? More than a few. It did get more than a few by the end. I remember in and around like seasons 3 to 5 is when it was like a regular sort of, okay, everybody's in on this show kind of thing. And this was one of them ones where it was across the board, like, you know, the actors getting nominated, the show getting nominated almost by default every year. I'm pretty sure this was also in a point where we weren't doing 2 year waits between shows. I don't remember Breaking Bad being part of the, you know, the era we're in now where it's sort of 18 months, 2 years between shows. I think it was one that was pretty much on every year.
Well, they split the final season, didn't they?
Yeah, that one. I think, yeah.
But yeah.
But that, even that was only a year between those two parts. So,
yeah. It won 16 Emmys out of 58 nominations it had over the course of the run. Including 2 wins for Best Drama Series, a win for Bryan Cranston for Best Lead, a win for Aaron Paul for Best Supporting Actor, and a gun won for Outstanding Supporting Actress. It won for writing, won for picture editing as well. So yeah, I mean, crazy amount of rewards that show got.
I kind of remember it. I kind of remember it becoming one where it was sort of, okay, let's say you had 6 shows nominated, there would be 3 or 4 every year that would be like, okay, it's going to be these ones, and then what are the other, you know, new surprises? Kind of a bit like how, you know, Game of Thrones would end up. It would be, okay, that's obviously going to get nominated, but what else? As far as I remember, Breaking Bad was just, it became a regular one of that. So
yeah,
it did very, very well, I think, is a summary for that.
Won a BAFTA as well.
nice. But yeah, glad you're enjoying Entertainment Talk stuff and Geek Town stuff. Of course, it's great if you listen to both. Then you get your TV and your film news and whatever else we do over here. So you get your video game news here and then your TV and film news over on Geek Town. So we kind of tried to have you covered in that way.
Yes.
Yeah. And then lots and lots of opinions on stuff. So, because I always say, whether we do gaming talk on like a Wednesday or, because I mention it pretty much on every podcast, because it's just like part of the outro. If I've done one that's like on a Tuesday or on a Thursday, I'll go, oh yeah, there was one, you know, yesterday or a couple of days before. So I often recommend jumping from that to that. So, but yeah, glad you found both of us eventually. So that's good. What else did you say here? Caught me Breaking Bad. Yeah, we should be regular. Hopefully every Wednesday. There's 13 episodes, so I think I did say, no, I wouldn't have said it on a podcast. I think it's going to be about December 3rd if we do it each week, roughly. I think that'll be when the finale is. Which is interesting, because I'm starting Gen V Season 2 next week, and that will finish before we finish with this, because they're starting the three episodes. So, but yeah, that's that for now. Anyway, again, if people want to write in about this opening episode, maybe you see this pop up in your podcast feed and go, oh, they finally did come back. So hopefully you listen and tune in and join in with, the great stuff with Breaking Bad. So anyway, thank you all very much for listening. You can find everything else that we do actually do on entertainmenttalk.org for TV, games, films, Man United podcasts. Like I said, the United cast will be back this weekend on Sunday, Manchester Derby. So we'll see how that goes. There's a couple of films still on the way. So we're going to be checking those out. Gaming Talk will be back next week. There'll be... I might do a Charlie Kirk episode. I don't want to do that now, but I might do that. Although there's going to be things coming out about that and everything. So
yeah.
That obviously happened in the world of political stuff. Gen V, like I said, starts next week. So you can check that out as well. And then I think we'll be doing four regular ones will be Gaming Talk, United Cast, this, and then Gen V, and then whatever else comes out. So, head over to the site, all the podcast platforms, of course, Entertainment Talk, on your favorite podcast platforms for all those podcasts. You can help us by, of course, listening to more episodes. There's a whole bunch of them, so check those out. Word of mouth, social media, and if someone mentions a thing we've podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for your free podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. Geektown, David, that's run by you over there. What is happening with Geektown?
Well, normal news and air date updates and renewals and all that sort of stuff. That's all over on geektown.co.uk. You can find all of that. And there's been some interesting news regarding things like Red Dwarf recently and 24. We talked a bit about 24 news on Geektown Radio, which we were on this week as well. We also talked about Mitchell and Webber not helping Anno 117. We talked about the Human Centipede, which amazingly we managed to get through without actually doing anything that was not safe for work on that entire review, which I'm really impressed by. But we also talked about Dexter Resurrection, the new Tomb Raider series, live action series, a bunch of other stuff we talked about on that's Geektown Radio episode 472. So you can catch that on if you search for Geektown Radio on your podcast app, wherever you get your podcast. And also, if you're a fan of The Traitors, by the way, over the next few weeks you're definitely going to be wanting to listen to some episodes of that, because we have some special guest co-hosts coming on. So if you're a fan of The Traitors, definitely keep an ear out for that over the next few weeks. But that's all over on Geektown Radio.
Cool, nice. So look forward to all that, and of course go to geektown.co.uk for the TV and film news posts as well. So check out all of that. And then there's of course YouTube for us, Entertainment Talk Plays, for all those videos on for video game stuff. Don't know what else to say about it. You can check out our random video game stuff over on Entertainment Talk Plays over on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.